So Acts has kind of reached this concluding point where the ends of the earth has been reached, has been attained, has been arrived at. But that's not where the story ends. That's not the end of the work of the Spirit in the life of His church, in the life of the community. We've been talking about how these kind of two aspects, in Jerusalem, throughout Judea, in Samaria, to the ends of the earth, and the Spirit being poured out on all flesh, work together in the narrative of Acts to demonstrate how the Spirit is moving in the forming of its community, in the forming of these Jesus worshipers who are following after Him, and how the gospel extends into all these areas and is being poured out on all people, even Samaritans and eunuchs and Roman officials. And this is the ever-expanding gospel of Jesus' lordship. And so this kind of moves all the way back to the idea that the Spirit will come to enable and empower His people to move out testifying about Jesus' lordship in healings and miracles, in love and in community together, and in gospel proclamation. So last week we looked at the Jerusalem Council and this debate about what it means to be the people of God, and these boundary markers that are there, and how the Spirit transcends those markers to make one people for Himself. And after this, Paul moves out again on his second tour of itinerant gospel proclamation in the book of Acts, as he goes and proclaims further along the path, deeper into the known world at the time, the good news that Jesus is Lord. And in Acts, it is shaped as this kind of expanding from one central place further and further out. And I mentioned last week about how for us, with the gospel being basically spread around the world, it's the kind of idea of lights flashing on a dark map all throughout the world as we reflect His image and His glory, that as we become the light of the world, it's this continual spreading out of the gospel of lights going on into dark places and His lordship being declared in these situations. But for Paul and for the narrative of Acts, it's this kind of leading towards Rome, because all roads lead to Rome. When Leona and I were living in Europe, we had the chance to visit Rome, and I was talking to one of my friends about this, and I can't remember if this was before he went or after he went, but we're talking about his journey to Rome, and I asked him, so how are you planning to go, like just kind of making small talk, and he said he was just going to get on a highway and then just go, because all the roads lead to Rome, and eventually he would get there. And I don't remember what I said after that. Anyway, all roads lead to Rome is a common expression because of how it was the hub and the center of the world at that time. And in many ways, all roads did lead to this hub, this center, this place of Rome. And that's why Paul must go to Rome to proclaim the gospel in this central location, this center place, this basically center of the known world at that time. We use the expression more to be like, no matter how you try to accomplish the task, it ends up getting done in the same way, as opposed to actually being a geography type of idea. So Paul moves forward proclaiming the gospel, and he does this in three tours. He does it in 13, chapters 13 and 14, he proclaims the gospel in one kind of cycle, and then he does it again in 15 towards the middle of chapter 18, and then after a short break he continues along again in the next verse in chapter 18 all the way to the middle of chapter 21. And this is Paul. It's pushing ever further the gospel message, proclaiming it to more and to more people. And in this kind of final movement, it actually begins in Jerusalem, which is a fitting link up to how Acts began. And in verse 19:21, this is the first kind of real mention of Rome, this first kind of direction towards Paul's movement of gospel proclamation to Rome. He mentions afterwards, Paul felt compelled by the Spirit to go to Macedonia and Achaia before going to Jerusalem. And after that, he said, I must go on to Rome. And this will then complete the idea of to the ends of the earth. Rome was mentioned a couple times earlier, but more in just a geographical kind of checking off and location and this is the first real narrative movement forward where Rome becomes this goal, this longing, this direction that Paul must take. And the statement is not dissimilar to when Jesus sets his face to Jerusalem, when he has that resolve to go up to Jerusalem, because that's the place where he will take his gospel announcement and enact that in his death and resurrection. And Jerusalem is really set up as the goal of the gospel of Luke as Jesus progresses ever further until Jerusalem, where he then dies and then is raised again. And so Rome, in a similar sort of pattern as Luke directs Paul there, as he continues to move ever further to Rome. And we see that Paul resolves himself in the Spirit to do this. And then the Spirit comes along in chapter 20, verse 22, to highlight that Paul says he's bound by the Spirit to go to Jerusalem. And he, regardless of what awaits there, he must go ahead and continue on proclaiming the gospel. So as Paul completes his final tour of itinerant gospel proclamation, he then makes his way to Jerusalem. And he's able there to tell his story, to declare Jesus' lordship, to make a declaration about what God has done. As I consider this narrative, I find almost his arrival in Rome somewhat anticlimactic when you consider all the intervening material that takes place to get Paul to Rome for that accomplishment to happen. And this continues on from Acts 21 all the way until he reaches Rome. And along the way, he's engaging with the powers. He's engaging with the leadership. He's engaging with the different officials and in different forms. And he's able to, in all these cases, to tell his story, which is a story of Jesus' lordship. And I find it kind of funny along the way that often people don't quite understand what he's been arrested for or what the challenges that are going on. We have in Acts 23, verse 28 and 29, when the Roman official Claudius Lysia writes to Governor Felix, he writes this: "Then I took him to their high council to try to learn the basis of the accusation against him. I soon discovered the charge was something regarding their religious law, certainly nothing worthy of imprisonment or death." And this is then echoed a little bit later in Festus to Agrippa when Paul, he explains to them, "Instead, it was something about their religion, a dead man named Jesus, who Paul insists is alive. I was at a loss to know how to investigate these things, so I asked him whether he would be willing to stand trial on these charges in Jerusalem. But Paul appealed to have his case decided by the emperor, so I ordered that he be held in custody until I could arrange to send him to Caesar." And even after the time where Paul is able to present his case, and Agrippa then says to Festus, he could have been set free if he hadn't appealed to Caesar. What I find interesting and funny is that as Paul is explaining what's going on, as they're wrestling with what to do with him, they don't understand the grandness of what Paul is talking about. It's almost dismissed as this silly little debate about something about their religion. And they don't come to fully realize that the declaration that Jesus has been raised from the dead actually calls into question their very authority, their very power, their ability to even make the decision about what to do with him. It's a certain irony that they highlight that it's about some debate about whether this man is alive or dead, but that silly debate actually means everything about Jesus' lordship, and it calls into question all other systems of power and authority. And so it's almost a sense of further irony as Paul appeals to Caesar to give him justice, to give him a fair situation, a fair trial, because Paul, as he declares Jesus' lordship, calls into question Caesar's very ability to give justice, to be just. And he doesn't even respond or reflect that the legitimacy of Caesar's reign and authority. The very statement that Jesus is Lord calls into question the fact that people would say Caesar is Lord, and that the gospel proclamation stands in tension to against these officials in the course of all these journey. A further irony is that the worst thing that could happen to Paul would be death, would be execution, and this is what Romans would do to criminals who are inciting rebellion or the like. And it's interesting, in Paul's appeal to Caesar, he makes the statement, "If I've done something worthy of death, I don't refuse to die, but if I'm innocent, no one has a right to turn me over to these men to kill me." Even in this kind of statement of defiance, of not being concerned about death, Paul is highlighting that death has indeed been conquered by his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And we see this echoed in Paul's letters, that he's not concerned with death. He's just longing to fulfill what God has given to him as task, to carry on this gospel proclamation, to declare Jesus' lordship in all situations, in all circumstances. The empire can do its worst because Jesus is Lord of death as well. So along the path, Paul is confronting the powers. He's declaring Jesus' lordship over all creation, over all officials. And he's able to use his position as a Roman citizen to stand trial before Caesar and take the gospel message to the heart of the Roman Empire. I was able to go to Rome. I forgot to tell Rod to put this picture. And this is the one, the Roman Forums. This is an old... So these are some of the old ruins of Rome. So it's kind of fun to think about that Paul could have been walking along this path as he then enters Rome. Before he gets there, he is unfortunately forced to go to Malta, where his ship crashes. And I was fortunate enough to intentionally go to Malta and not crash there with a ship or anything. And this is a picture of Malta. And the next picture is the church commemorating Paul's shipwreck. It's way too small to see, but on the archway it says this is a commemorative Church of St. Paul Shipwreck Church? Something, I don't know. I read it just before I got up here. So that's a little Malta break of, yeah, it was a fun place. And it highlights in the book of Acts that he received good hospitality, and I like to say things haven't changed 2,000 years later. It was a fun experience. So moving back to the message. After Paul starts in Malta, he's able to make it to encounter Rome. And this is the goal of Luke's narrative and the ends of the earth, in the sense that Rome is the hub of the known world, is the center point. And out from there, the gospel is then able to spread out. And it's important to realize that this isn't the end. This isn't the close of the narrative. This isn't the end of the story of God's presence and moving throughout all creation. The end passage that we read highlights that Paul lived freely in Rome, was able to continue on proclaiming the gospel, continue his teaching. And this kind of forms this image of people hearing the message and then spreading out continually, continuing on the role of gospel proclamation. And we see, actually, in Romans 15, and there's letters that have primary meanings and secondary meanings. And Romans is one that has so much dense theology as it moves towards the closing chapter that kind of the occasion and the purpose of Paul's writing of Romans can be missed. Romans 15, 23 to 25 highlights the reason Paul set to writing this letter in many ways. And he writes this, "But I've now finished my work in these regions, and after all these long years of waiting, I'm eager to visit you. I'm planning to go to Spain, and when I do, I will stop off in Rome, and after I have enjoyed your fellowship for a little while, you can provide for my journey. But before I come, I must go to Jerusalem to take a gift to the believers there." You can see how this letter lines up with the story of Acts thus far as he resolves himself to go to Rome. But Rome is only the beginning, the end point for a new beginning for him to carry the gospel message even further, to carry it on into Spain. And he's hoping that the Roman church will embrace him, give him fellowship, and support him as he continues on gospel proclamation. It's one of those great unanswerable questions of history, whether Paul was able to succeed in this task. But you can see his heart and his longing to continue on in the work that God has called him to go, to continue on even further beyond Rome to make sure that all corners of the earth hear the great news that Jesus is Lord of the entire world. And this is, there is no end journey, there is no completion to the goal, to the role of Christ Church in proclaiming his glory and his lordship. There is no end point where everything is completed and there's no more work to be done enacting the truth that Jesus is Lord over all creation. And this might sound like an exhausting sort of thing, an exhausting pressure that is on those who choose to follow after Jesus, to follow in his path and in his journey. But what has been highlighted throughout the book of Acts, or the story, is that the Spirit is there to encourage, to empower, to sustain his people for that journey, for that role. The Spirit is always there to give power to proclaim the gospel in Jerusalem, throughout Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth, wherever that is for us in Saskatoon, to the very ends of the earth, to be his light, to be his hand and his feet. And that's what the Acts of the Spirit and the Acts of the Apostles highlight, is that the Spirit is what works through the apostles to accomplish the task of that Jesus has given to his church. And it's our responsibility to find ways, to find opportunities, to find places where we can enact and declare this lordship, this glory, and to do this through opportunities of healing, of miracles, of community, of gospel proclamation. This coming around and modeling what it means to be Jesus' hands and his feet, what it means to be his light in dark places. What it means to declare his lordship to the powers that set themselves up in opposition to the lordship of Jesus Christ in our time. And we're probably moving into a similar period as in Paul's time, where people might wonder about what's the silly debates about this person who is said to have been raised from the dead. This sort of misunderstanding about what the gospel means and how that permeates all areas of society in Jesus' lordship. And so it's also an opportunity to find ways, as Paul does, to declare the gospel in different opportunities. And we see this throughout his tours of gospel proclamation, that he uses the things that are there in front of him to engage in conversation. He uses the different opportunities, the different situations to declare Jesus' lordship, to engage people in language and in ways that they understand, and allows for his message to then be engaged with. And so it highlights that there's no one way to proclaim the gospel. It's a way of living. It's a way of seeking opportunity, the way of discerning through the Spirit what God is calling us towards, what he is, and how he is creating opportunities for us to do this. I like to think of the Spirit as the... Oh, I don't just like to think of it. The Spirit is what sustains us and encourages us throughout this task and allows us to sense and know what we're called to and how he is leading us. And as Jerusalem became the goal for Jesus' ministry, as he goes in that direction, and Rome becomes the goal of Paul's ministry in how the narrative of Luke and Acts shape us, so the entire world becomes our goal, our narrative, to be the light in dark places. And I also like to think of the idea of the table as being that hub by which we can all gather around to receive the Spirit for energy, for encouragement, for sustenance, so that we may spread out from there to the entire ends of the earth, wherever that may be. So as Paul reaches Rome and then is able to then spread out from there to the entire ends of the earth, each week we come to the table to partake of the lordship of Jesus Christ in the bread and the cup so that we can spread out from there to the very ends of the earth, discerning and considering how the Spirit is leading us into the places he's called us to be Jesus' light, to be his image bearers in all creation.